This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Thursday, the 27th of March. I'm Alec Hogan. Here's your BizNews briefing. Well, the stakes in the conflict between South Africa and the Trump administration just ratcheted up by another 24 billion rands this morning, putting South Africa's entire motor industry at risk. What happened? Donald Trump has levied 25% import tariff on all motor vehicles that are imported into the United States of America. In other words, any vehicle, any car, any bucky, or truck or bus, which South Africa exports quite a bit to the US at the moment. Anything not made in America, you've got to pay an extra 25% on. At the moment, South Africa will be exempt from this by being a member of AGOA, but it has been doing things that contravene the relationship on AGOA, and if it's kicked out of AGOA, which has been proposed by many within the American political establishment, well, that would be the end of those exports, because putting 25% onto the price of cars being sent there will price them out of the US market. This data that you can see on the screen now from the United Nations' Comtrade shows how important the whole story has become to South Africa in recent times, that it's hoped that they can find some kind of common ground in the near future. While they're looking for common ground, that is between the Trump administration and the South African government, they will be also having a look at what's going on in black economic empowerment. In many respects, the ANC was given a free pass over the last 30 years, and so some of its policies, which have had destructive effects in the country, including those that are racially based, and there are a whole lot of those, have been ignored primarily by the international community until now. Now they're front and center, now they're being focused on. And despite the fact that there will be very strong antibodies from those who benefit from BEE legislation, the pressure's mounting, and it does appear as though common sense might come through at last. I spoke this morning with the Institute for Race Relations' head of policy research, Dr. Anthea Jeffrey. And just to remind you, Dr. Jeffrey has degrees from Wits University, Cambridge University, and London University. So extremely well qualified to make the assumptions and assessments that she has done.
I think that for very many years, the narrative was always that there might be the odd problem with BEE, but really the solution was just to ratchet up the rules and then to implement it more strongly, and then it would be even more successful. And I think there has been a reluctance until now to acknowledge the extent to which it's widened inequality. As you were saying, that it helps perhaps 10-15% of the black population, the people who are the best skilled, the most credentialed, often the best politically connected. And it's harmed the remaining 85%. And I think that realization is really beginning to hit home. There have always been some acknowledgements of that. Interestingly, some of them coming from very senior figures within the ANC. With Pravin Gordhan back in 2010, for example, saying that BEE hadn't worked, hadn't made South Africa a fairer society, had helped the few rather than the many. And the SACP in 2017 saying that it was the main reason for our rising Gini coefficient, because it had so contributed to intra-black inequality. Again, same picture. It's the small group at the top that benefit, the great majority who don't. And then the gap between the two of them widens. So we now do, have a widening recognition that BEE is not working. Perhaps it's also triggered by the fact that we have yet another year of meager economic growth at 0.6% of GDP against population growth of 1.3% of GDP. So obviously the entire population is getting poorer year by year on a per capita basis. We need to break the mold. And since BEE is something that deters investment, hampers growth, worsens unemployment. It rarely deserves critical scrutiny, and we believe the development of an alternative.
She mentions the Gini coefficient, and this is something that is often pointed out about South Africa. What it means is that the higher the Gini coefficient, the greater the inequality between rich and poor. That sat at a number of 59 in 1994. It's now up to 63 now. So what is the alternative? What could be so much better than the disaster we currently have that public support would blow away the efforts of the elite few who want to obviously keep in place laws that put at least 150 billion rand a year into their pockets, and that comes just from the legally enforced premiums. In other words, the premium that the state can and does pay to them on procurement alone. Here's Dr. Jeffrey.
Because the Institute has been polling Black South Africans on BEE and on some aspects of our EED proposal for a number of years. And with the EED idea, we particularly want to do something that will reach down to the grassroots, that will help the most disadvantaged get ahead by equipping them with better education, better healthcare, better housing. And international experience shows that you can do that through tax-funded vouchers. So we've been asking people, what do they think about vouchers? And in our last polling in 2024, there were 92% of Black respondents who really liked the idea of schooling vouchers. 83% supported healthcare vouchers. They wanted to have them. 80% were in favor of housing vouchers. And when we asked people if they thought the vouchers would be more effective than BEE in helping them to get ahead, 81% of Black respondents said yes. And this is a consistent picture that goes back to 2016 when we first began asking this question. So if the political parties could tap into what ordinary South Africans think and want, and then provide a very clear message that this is what they would introduce if given the power to rule, then perhaps this would help to break the logjam where people know that the ANC government is not working for them, but they haven't switched ready considerably to alternatives yet, not enough. We saw a big shift, of course, in the 2024 election, but we need a bigger shift still.
It's a terrific interview. It's on BizNews TV. Now go and watch it. The full interview runs to about 23 minutes. Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, who's head of policy research at the Institute for Race Relations. That voucher idea, man, it resonates with me. But maybe it's not the entire solution. But what we do know is the BEE policies that the ANC is doubling down on at the moment are certainly not a solution. They're actually and making things even worse. Well, my colleague Chris Stain has been keeping an eye on the awful story of the professional duo who were commissioned to investigate corruption at Fort Hare University. But after uncovering the facts, they were arrested and charged as though they were the criminals. They're going to be back in court again on Monday. And Chris spoke this morning to Bradley Conradi and Sarah Berger.
Now, Bradley, last time we spoke, you said you were going to take action against the police, legal action for your arrests and prosecution. What is happening with that?
So we've submitted our letter of demand, which must be done within 6 months if you sue in the state. We've issued a detailed letter against the various police commissioners in various provinces, just given how the matter has gone. That's on the one hand. On the second hand, we have formally lodged the complaint with the Portfolio Committee on Police. We are demanding an investigation into who ordered our arrest, why was a jet paid for by the South African public made available to transport Sarah and myself to East London and used on that same weekend to pick up two other accused, I think in two different provinces, and then the arrival of, I think it would be safe to say, hundreds of police people at court when we appeared. The roads were closed. There were cars, armed guns, people with automatic rifles right down the road because the minister was in town, the head of police was in town, His entire cohort was in town. The head of crime intelligence was in town. All of that, while at the same time, we know in South Africa, hundreds of people are being murdered each and every day. Women are being abused, are being raped. There are home invasions, assaults. That we're talking about hundreds per day. I've looked at the stats recently. And I think you have seen the photographs of the people that came to fetch us. If you watch the American television, the SWAT people have nothing on the people that came storming into my office with balaclavas, the helmets, R5 rifles, two pistols, stun grenades. Where are those people when ordinary South Africans are just trying to stay safe? And that is what I want the portfolio committee to look into and to call those people to Parliament. And we have requested that we be allowed to be there because we want to look at them and we want answers from them. We are not going to go anywhere. They are trying to put us out of business. They think that we are going to disappear, but they need to know one thing. The more they take from us, the more they strip us of what we have, the more difficult it's going to become for them. Sarah and I have one unique advantage over probably thousands of people that are subjected to political abuse in this country. We are both lawyers, and we are good lawyers. I've been a famous lawyer for nearly 20 years. I've stood up in the Constitutional Court myself, and I've argued precedent-setting cases, and I've had the assistance of Sarah in doing that. I do not need lawyers if it ever came down to that. And we will not stop. We will hold each and every person in this chain accountable within the law. They are not going to get away from it. They made the biggest mistake ever when they thought they're simply going to do to us what they have done to countless people. We have a constitution which we like to brag to everyone in the world and say it's the best constitution. I'll tell South Africa now it's utter rubbish. Not the constitution, the enforcement of it. It doesn't exist because I couldn't even enforce it. I've had so many of my rights abused as a lawyer with access to the best lawyers as friends and colleagues. Those rights do not exist. And that is wrong. They should be there for everyone.
What a story. And if the White House want any ammunition about things going wrong in South Africa right now, sure, what you just heard from Bradley Conradie and Sarah Berger. Remember, they were brought in to investigate corruption. They had a report, and because their report was not what those who brought them in wanted it to be, they have now been smeared. Well, onto something a lot different now. And the major criticism against Bitcoin is that it's impractical, cannot be used for transaction, and as such will never replace paper money that's created by central banks. Well, at the BizNews conference earlier this month, Stafford Marcy delivered a world-class address. You can get that one as well on the BizNews TV channel on YouTube. And he showed how all of this is changing. Here's a clip from the Q&A where Stafford answers a delegate who wanted to know how someone could use Bitcoin to buy a loaf of bread.
What's happening? Go Bitcoin Ikasi. It's happening. There's a township here on the coastline close by. The whole town township runs on Bitcoin. They save in Bitcoin. They spend Bitcoin. They do haircuts. They earn Bitcoin. And what they're using is, it's not Bitcoin layer one. There's another layer on top of Bitcoin. It's L2, layer two, and that's the Lightning Network. And if there's one thing that's not being focused on enough in the world today is the Lightning Network. And the Lightning Network essentially is this peer-to-peer layer on top of Bitcoin that abstracts the transaction away from the actual mining happening. And it can happen on channels above Bitcoin. And when it's finally closed, then it happens inside of Bitcoin. I'm not going to explain Lightning here, but essentially Lightning enables hundreds of thousands of transactions a second instantaneously on the Bitcoin network. So you know that thing about Bitcoin so slow every 10 minutes? We like that. We want Bitcoin to be slow. We don't want Bitcoin to be fast. We want Bitcoin to be tied to energy. We want math and physics to do the transaction management. We don't want some cute Silicon Valley engineer with a couple of machines scaling up transactions. We don't want that. Bitcoin, we want. We want the oil tanker to take 20 miles to make a U-turn. Okay, that's why countries like Bitcoin. But on the top, we want noise, we want speed, and that's layer two. That's the Lightning Network. And that enables people with wallets, which live on layer three. So they download wallets of Satoshi, Moon Wallet, whatever those wallets are on the top. And then they populate those wallets with their Satoshis, and they walk around and they spend their Satoshis, and that's instantaneous settlement amongst them. And that they're not spending the fees that you see on top of the Bitcoin network, and it's not as slow. It's instantaneous settlement.
Are those wallets like your wallet and your phone?
Yeah, you can download it. I mean, if you have, go download. The one that I use is the Moon Wallet. I mean, there's Wallet of Satoshi, M-U-U-N. Download it, send some Bitcoin into that wallet. Just send like 10 rands worth of Bitcoin into that, a few Satoshis. And then when you meet somebody else, just send, pay them and see the transaction. It's the fastest exchange of value in the history of humanity.
How many people accept it?
I mean, we got hundreds of millions of people in the world. I mean, I did a demo at a conference where I showed the utilization of the Lightning Network and Bitcoin to take rands over the Bitcoin network and settle in a pub in pounds in a nanosecond.
But I'm talking more of what's happening in the African continent, for instance. Is somebody in Malawi able to get value from someone in South Africa through
instantaneously? That? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, instantaneously. Yeah, remittances is a big, but there's more. There's remittances is a more multidimensional thing. But yes, remittances is, there's quite a few companies right now that are using the Bitcoin Lightning Network with the wallets for remittances. It's happening.
And then
it really drops the cost of a remittance. I mean, you can send, you know what's really cool with this? Right now, remittances is broken because of the transaction fees.
Yeah.
So if you go to one of these retailers, so you go into a PEP. PEP allows you to do remittances, right? You're Zimbabwean, you want to send something to Harare, or you're Ghanaian, you want to send something to Ghana. The problem is you have to have at least 800 Rand to 1,500 Rand to actually do a remittance because of the transaction fee. And when you do it, it's clunky, right? And it's kind of, you hope it's going to work. And when they get it over there, they're standing in a line waiting. If you do it across the Bitcoin network utilizing Lightning, he could be standing. He doesn't have to go to PEP. He could be standing with his phone and he can send 20 Rand for the loaf of bread when his mom pinged him that she's in the line and she needs to pay for the loaf of bread instantaneously.
And that will be accepted where she's buying the loaf.
Yeah, provided the merchant accepts it, yes.
And how many merchants do accept it?
Well, that's growing. It's growing. More and more merchants are accepting.
But now, at this point?
It's infancy. It's not where we want. I mean, Pick and Pay accepts this. Pick and Pay works this way. You can go into Pick and Pay with your Luno, Valor, or your Moon Wallet, your Wallet of Satoshi, and you can go settle inside of a Pick and Pay for your groceries today. And notice the transaction speed when you're there. It's faster than your credit card. And guess what? Pick and Pay gets those Satoshis immediately. When you pay with your credit card, Pick and Pay gets their money after 3 to 5 days.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Hey, Stafford. He's been a regular at the BizNews conferences, a long time friend and business associate of mine. And man, he's got the inside track there. So I would suggest if you are interested in how the world is changing, go and watch that video, the full recording, which is on the BizNews TV channel on YouTube. Another interview that's there is the one I had yesterday with Tony Leon. I quizzed him about how he rated his chances of becoming South Africa's next ambassador to the United States, in amongst many other issues that we discussed. But I started off with that one because he's been proposed by the DA's federal executive chair, Helen Ziller. Well, Tony said that he doubted that President Ramaphosa would stray outside his own circle, But if he were offered the job, he'd certainly have a close look at the terms and conditions. Yesterday, our Chris Stain spoke about this ambassadorship with Colonel Chris Wyatt.
Well, I'm pretty confident that Tony Leon would be welcome here. He's been an ambassador before. He knows the decorum. When Rasul was first made PNG, within moments, I suggested Tony Leon. Not that I'm a fan or a critic. I know that he's got the demeanor and he's got the gravitas and he knows what he's doing. He's done it previously. And he also won't act the fool. I think he might be campaigning for it. I've seen a lot more comments and op-eds from Tony Leon over the past 3 months. So maybe he saw this coming. But I've seen a lot more in the media from Tony Leon. As far as Lindiwe Sisulu, that would be a step backwards. Lindiwe Sisulu, for those who know South Africa, see her as an unaccomplished, permanent political appointee that's never done anything and left controversy and failure in every ministerial position she's been in. Sending her to the U.S., the only thing that she brings with her is her family's name, a historic name, of course, from her parents. And that's about it. So I think that would be another own goal, which means that's probably who Sir Ramaphosa will pick, is Lindiwe Sisulu.
I don't think they sit around the same fire, to be honest. Can you think of anybody else?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there ought to be some out-of-the-box thinking. You know, some of the really, now I'll be accused of personal bias here, but I'll just lay it out there. Someone that would probably be a very good pick for this role, who is balanced and can talk to everyone on all sides and has always done that in Parliament, South Africa, and I think also gets internationally. This is kind of a wild card, but Major General Bantu Holomisa. I think he's got the right demeanor for it. Now, of course, I'll be accused of personal bias. I've known him for a long time, and we speak quite a bit, but I think he's the right kind of guy. Look, there are other South Africans who could fill this role. I mean, you know, there's people in business out there that could be pulled into the role. You don't have to be a politician. In fact, it's better that you're not a politician. It's better if you're a successful business person that knows how to negotiate the shoals and the shallow waters of making a big mistake by putting your foot in your mouth.
Bantu Holomisa, come on. Anyway, I suppose stranger things have happened. On to the international space now, in particular in healthcare. Our partners at The Economist invest a lot of space in the publication in following the latest developments in healthcare. And that's an area that gets a lot of attention on our site as well. A focus of late has been longevity. And here's a leader from the latest edition of The Economist, which unpacks how the war against aging is being fought and how some actually believe that eventually they might overcome death.
Brian Johnson wants to live forever. The American businessman pops 100 pills a day, never eats after 11 a.m., and obsessively monitors dozens of his body's biomarkers. The goal, as he will tell anyone who asks, is not merely to live a few years longer. It is to vanquish death entirely. Eccentric? Undoubtedly. Mr. Johnson is not alone. He's part of a growing movement that sees the human body as just another piece of hardware to be hacked, optimised and upgraded. In the name of human enhancement, Mr. Johnson and his fellows, who include Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, are exploring life extension, brain implants and drugs that enhance mind and body. A wannabe superhuman has a large menu of techniques to choose from. Some of the options are already to be found in medicine cabinets. The drug metformin, for instance, has been prescribed to diabetics for decades. In mice, at least, it seems to extend lifespans. Those results have not been confirmed in humans, but aspiring Methuselahs, including Mr. Johnson, are taking it anyway. Ritalin, prescribed to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and testosterone, the chief male sex hormone and a powerful anabolic steroid, are claimed to be nootropics, drugs that boost cognitive performance. Other chemicals are less familiar. Nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, better known as NAD+, is vital for cellular metabolism. Not only is it supposedly a nootropic, it allegedly has anti-aging properties too. Adventurous biohackers can do more than pop pills. They might travel to Prospera, a lightly regulated place in Honduras, founded with help from Mr. Thiel. There, they can have genes inserted into their cells to try to get their body to make more of a protein called follistatin. The clinic says that this will promote muscle growth and lengthen telomeres, chemical caps on the ends of chromosomes that shorten with age. For decades, regulators have concentrated on treatments that are designed to restore ill people to a baseline of health. Attempts to improve those who are already healthy or to fight natural processes are therefore neglected. Aging, for instance, is not usually classified as a disease, which makes it harder to run trials designed to treat it. That's starting to change. American regulators recently approved a trial of metformin as an anti-aging medicine. Reform needs to go further and faster. Better rules would help patients sort the brass from the muck. They would be in the interest of honest researchers too, since an official stamp of approval would be worth a lot of money. And the benefits could be huge. Most people enjoy being alive and dislike the effects of growing old. A drug that slowed the ageing of everyone in America enough to raise life expectancy by a year would bring benefits that one study values at $38 trillion. Serious human enhancement sounds like science fiction, but there's no reason to think it's impossible. If and when real advances turn up, the world could change very quickly. Think of GLP-1 weight loss drugs, which were in development for years before demand exploded overnight. Better for government to set some rules now than be caught on the hop if and when Mr. Johnson and his fellow biohackers strike it big.
Fascinating story, and look at the economic impact of that. 1 year, giving 1 year extra to people living in America would add $38 trillion. Yo, those are big numbers. Anyway, we'll be back again with a briefing on Monday. Until then, cheerio. This Biz News Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.